Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy.
Hi, Stephen. Welcome, and thank you for joining us on the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast.
Oh, very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
Eventually, I feel up to it. I've not been asked before, but it's just it come a time when you did say to me, I was actually feeling it at that point. I was actually feeling, you know what, I'd like to give something back, if I can.
Thank you. Well, we definitely appreciate it. So, why don't you tell us all a little bit about yourself, Stephen?
Yep. So, I'm 35. I was born in Glasgow, Southside. I'm not born at the south side, born in the hospital obviously, but I was from the south side, the deep south as they call it, and my life's been pretty eventful. I've had a lot of things that have been good for me, a lot of things bad, but I've been close to my family and things like that. I've worked all over. I've worked in Edinburgh, stayed in Edinburgh, I've worked in Aberdeen, I worked offshore, and I've worked in Glasgow. I've been down in England working in different places. So I've been about and abroad as well, as you imagine. So yeah, life's been pretty good.
And what sort of things have you done for work?
Work, yeah, when I worked in Aberdeen, I saved up my courses to work offshore in the oil rigs. So what I was just saying about that, I was in health and safety and I was a steward as well. I was nominated to be health and safety, which was a nice thing at the time. Did not expect it. So I did that, I got into that. But at that time I was doing 3 weeks away and 3 weeks at home. 3 weeks away and 3 weeks back, I missed a lot of things. Christmases, birthdays, family, things together. So I wasn't particularly happy, and I noticed that when I was offshore I didn't like being on my own for too long. But I never thought that would bother me, because eventually I left to get back into what I was doing before, which was finance. So I worked in different companies, finance companies. I was doing investments, stocks and shares, every aspect of finance you can probably think of, I've worked in. And it's good because I worked my way up from the bottom. I started off at the bottom. Well, I got quite lucky in the jobs that I got at the start, because it was good companies, it was good money and things like that. And I changed my offshore life to finance life for the same, around about the same money. So yeah, I was doing that, I was happy, I worked my way up. I became a manager for one company for 45 years. I was very proud of that. I was thinking to do with the work and the people. I enjoyed all that training stuff. I worked in QA. I left that. I went to another managerial position where I was an area customer relationship manager. So I was pretty good in that as well. That was great. So yeah, I did that. I was working. My life was very busy. And then a couple of things kind of happened towards the end, where my dad got cancer, throat cancer. 5 years later, he beat it, and then a couple of years later, my father contracted that again. This time it was inoperable, so we knew the end result of that. And my nan at that time, she had cancer, breast cancer. It spread throughout her body. So these people, I found it hard to be with her at that time, because I loved them so much. You know what I mean? They made me feel really special in life. And affected the full family. Everybody was not dealing with it well. So I worked in Edinburgh, I'd been really busy. And what happened was, I would travel home at the weekend, and I stayed there. I actually lived there. When I traveled home, I would go and stay with one during this time, and then go and stay with another the next day. And I'd be back to work. And I think over time, the cycle of that, meeting your friends, you'd always meet your friends out after work, and go for a beer, go for a drink. And I started to get involved in that side of it, probably too much, because of what was happening. I wasn't the best of dealing with my emotions at the time, because even since a young boy I was always trying to look after people, and that was always like, you know, care. I was very much into care, looking after the family and everything like that. So during that time I found it really tough. I remember I was around both of them. I lived with one in the hospital and I lived with one in their house during these times. Sadly, they both passed on, and affected everybody in different ways. I was still trying to work in my professional life, and I kind of went further and deal with the family. So I gave up.
So who else was in the family?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, my sister my sister Carmen, who's 26, my brother Michael, who's 34, and my mum, and my granddad Murray. So I was very close to these people. I'd always tried to do the best thing, or I wanted to do the best thing, but some things that started to affect me were if I was out too much, because I couldn't deal with the emotions back then, where I was milking about everyone else apart from myself at the time. So if you fast forward that to the end and the deaths, I wasn't dealing well. I had a relationship. I started up with a lady. She's from England, South England, and then she went to Leeds because she was at university, but she wasn't, she was the same age, she's around my sister's age. So everything was good, and I was trying to all my life make some changes. I knew things that affected me, and my mental health wasn't great, let's be honest. My mental health wasn't great. And during that time, I had a breakup as well. I started to distance myself from family because we'd all fell out and stuff. And I had a sole purpose in place to, I was just making sure that we were okay and everything was okay. I wasn't actually focused on myself and my personal life. Professional, so I took a couple of jobs that were not manager and things like that to maybe have money coming in. So I had a house at the time in Glasgow, which I let my mother and sister stay in while I was living in Edinburgh. So eventually they got a new house. I sold the house, which is great. I moved in with my papa because he started to have trouble as well now with his heart. The fittest guy I've ever met, 78-year-old Murray. What happened there? He needed a triple bypass. And that was an ongoing, longer process. We might lose three of them. And I was staying there myself a lot of the time. And then COVID started. So during the COVID, I was alone. I wanted to be in the house and not meet anybody else because I didn't want to spread it to him and let him catch it when he was just recovering and then he was home. So it was a long time there where I found it quite difficult to balance things. That's what happened in my life.
And would have been feeling quite isolated, and
I was so isolated. I didn't do things I normally would. It made me quieter, and I was still trying to take care of people, but I forgot about myself. So I started to fall by the wayside a little bit, and things weren't great for me because the people I'd lost were so big an influence in my life. That stayed, loved them a bit. They trusted me, and it was good. But during that time, it wasn't good for me as a person because I always put a lot of things to one side and trying to focus on doing the things at the one time. And by being my friends, I picked up a lot of drinking at the time as well. So that's what happened.
Thanks for your honesty, Steve.
Yeah.
Your openness and your honesty, because there's some really difficult things you're talking about.
Yeah, life isn't perfect for everybody. I don't think anybody's perfect, but I need to be honest about things that were affecting me. And in the end up, it started having a massive effect on me because I'll just move on to the next day. And what happened, I had a breakup with my girlfriend at the time, who for the first time in a few years I was close to someone. And I spoke to them, somebody to speak to, shall we say. And it was good to be able to speak to them and put across how I was feeling and show the real me that I was, shut off for a long time. We had a breakup through disagreement or whatever, I can't remember, but I never ended it. But I look back at things now, we'll say I was colourblind because there was red flags that I was just going through at the same pace every time, and I wasn't thinking that too much about myself. I was just trying to be happy. And when that broke up, there was a couple of weeks that passed because I just got a new flat that I was living in, and then during that time, something bad happened, which I'll talk about now. So I pushed my family away. I wasn't able to be communicative with them, and because I was out too much, or I was my friends too much, or I was drinking too much, I started to distance myself. I tried to do it myself, my family, because I didn't want to be that way around them, or be a care, because I didn't have any caring about me like that. I'd always try to look after everybody else.
Again, Stephen, very insightful and very honest of you.
Oh, it's totally fine. I just sometimes you need to be honest. So, what during that time, my family wasn't speaking to me and I wasn't speaking to them. I was trying to make things better in my personal life, i.e. the relationship. when that fell by the wayside, 2 weeks had passed and I was going downhill. I'd started a new job with Premium Credit, which was something I wanted to dig in and get back into being professional and being good at work and finding that a comfortable balance. But I knew there were some things I had to work on about myself. So I started speaking to people and doing the right things. But during COVID, it's very hard, as you can probably imagine. So I was speaking to my mum one night, late at night, 12 o'clock at night, and I wanted to go and see her because I could tell it's having an effect on the whole family. And I was ready now, I'm feeling better. I wanted to do that. So it was 12 o'clock at night and I wanted to go into my mum's. I took the bike after having a few beers earlier with my friend, more than a few beers, shall we say. But I felt as if I was okay enough to drive. But obviously wasn't, because I have no memory of that day.
So this is a bicycle?
This is a bicycle, yeah. I've got no memory of that day. My brain stopped that day, my memory. And what had happened was, using my helmet that I used to use every time, I had everything safe on a bike, you can imagine. It's funny, but I'm actually a quality analyst now for finance, so I do think about everything too much. That's why I took the job. I think of every avenue from start to finish, to be sure of things 100%. So what happened, I went down there, I've got no memory, but it stopped, everything stopped, my life stopped, and I had a crash, or an accident.
So you didn't have a helmet on?
I didn't have the helmet on, so nobody knows, because I've investigated it via the police in recent months, and nobody knows if I hit a curb, if I hit a divot in the road, or if I've hit something like a car. There is no evidence, but I've been told I was found on the middle of the road with the bike facing the other way. The bike was pretty damaged, and what had happened was I was lying in the middle of the road, and in that stage, it's not even funny, I don't know why I'm laughing, smiling, I was bleeding out from my brain. So it wasn't a great time. I became unconscious and I was found. Somebody phoned an ambulance because they had a very loud bang in the house across the road to the houses, the flats. So what had happened was I was in a coma. And at that stage...
And you don't actually remember any of this?
I don't indeed. I don't remember anything like that. I don't remember anything.
It's just what you've been told.
It's just what I've been told.
Yeah.
I was rushed to the hospital. I was very lucky that all the surgeons, brain surgeons, were working at the time, and they didn't normally do that. But for some reason, they were there. I found myself very lucky because I had to get a craniotomy for a severe traumatic brain injury. So during the procedure in here, they had to remove part of my skull, the full side of it, in the top, which I've got a scar right down the middle of my head.
So that's the left side?
The left side, and I've got a scar around the left hand side, and
just
I've got a bit of a dent there, a wee dent.
Yeah.
And that was to keep me alive. They took that off. They took it off and they put it in my stomach, which I'm not
so
sure.
Just under the skin on your stomach?
Yeah, it was there. And that was, I didn't eat it. I didn't eat it, it was not my kind of thing. So what happened there was, they put it in there for nutrition to keep it well, and obviously a boy look after it, and my head was still bleeding out at that time. And what actually happened was I had 3 hematomas, or brain bleeds, which cause a lot of brain damage. So my head was basically scrambled, like standing on an egg. It was all over the place. I also hurt the frontal lobe in the right side. So having not remembered the crash, I don't much know what happened. It was pretty bad. I was nearly pronounced dead and I was in critical condition. That was the ward I was in, critical care. And that place they did the surgery, and I don't have any memory of being in the hospital at that point or the following month when I had the second operation. But I awoke from the coma 2 weeks later, which was early.
And do you remember that, Stephen?
No, I don't. I don't remember that. I have no memory. I'm just using accounts from my family and what I've been told, which is good, but it was scary to hear, so I wasn't told for a long time, as you can imagine. At that time...
And so, how long ago are we talking about here?
Yeah, that was May the 16th last year.
So it's So 12, just over 12 months.
Yes,
yeah,
just over that. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago in my head, because I knew that when I did wake up, I couldn't speak and I couldn't walk. I had to get help. I couldn't communicate. I was severely brain damaged. And you know, things that had to do with three hematomas, the doctors basically said at the time, he might not survive this, there's a low chance he will survive this. Or he might survive, and the words they use, they describe these things as being a vegetable. So one way I would wake up, my body would be beating, my heart would be beating, my body would be living, but my head might not be there, so it would be a vegetable. That's how bad the injury was.
It so sounds very traumatic.
It was traumatic. I have no memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only go by how it was when I first woke up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. But I didn't recognise.
What does it feel like hearing it now and speaking about it now?
It feels as if I've made, you know, my whole story now has been a 360. Because, as I said before, someone who cared about someone, his heart was the right place. It's what he was used to from a young boy, caring about people, my family, my sister, my brother, my mum. And when I first woke up, I couldn't remember that my dad had died,
mm-hmm.
or my nana had died, two people that gave birth in life. So I didn't recognise any of my family either. I just thought there were people passing. Pretty horrific. You imagine if you sit and wait and open your eyes and you can't speak, you can't walk, you have to get help to walk.
Must be quite scary
as well.
Go to the
bathroom, things like that.
Must be quite scary as well, trying to make sense of the world.
It's scary because when you wake up in a place and you can't remember what happened,
mm-hmm.
you feel as if it's a dream. And that's what it was like, being in a coma, waking up, it was like a dream. And thinking everybody, it's okay, you've still got them to come see you. But you can't remember what they look like, what they actually look like. I couldn't remember that, or how their voice was. And I remember myself at one point, my brother's wife, Ashley, walked into her room. I looked at her, I looked away, and then I had a feeling in my head that I knew this person. There was a recognition, somehow I managed it. Yeah, so I think during that time I'd woke up, my family, the only thing I can remember is my family, my brother running, my sister running, mum running towards me. I had broken the family in my eyes because I'd failed in life. I got to a place where I seen the look in people's faces, that's how I recognised them, their tears. And the only person that could be with me during that whole time of critical care unit was my papa. Nobody was allowed to see me. My brother eventually...
Because of COVID?
No, yeah, COVID, and obviously, you know, you need to have someone, one person to see you and things like that, so...
Restricted visiting though, wasn't
it? Yeah, and they were all heartbroken, as you can imagine. You know, I properly, like... They basically thought they were losing the third member of the family, and it just wasn't on in my head. So I knew something was up. So I said, obviously, recognising the tear, recognising the emotions in people's faces, which is the first thing I remembered I could do. But, you know, at that time, I was still unable to speak, unable to walk, go to the bathroom myself, and I was very much gone. I don't know any of these things fully, 100%, my family have told me. My sister, you went to hand me something. And I would use my left hand to reach out, and I was right-handed. So I always was decent with both hands, like dual-handed, shall we call it then. Playing ping pong and table tennis, I'm playing pool, I could always change about. But I couldn't write with both hands. I couldn't do anything like that. So my hand was my right hand, and I started reaching out to my left hand, and that's because the areas of the brain that were damaged.
Yeah. So did you find that unusual?
I didn't realise. I didn't actually realise that that's what I was doing. I was just acting by, you know, remembrance, what I could do. My right side of the body wasn't working at all at that time. It was not working at all. So it took weeks and weeks and weeks as time passed. And during that time, I started to feel a little bit better. I could speak, and I was dealing with people in the hospital, nurses and doctors. But they said at that point that it was a bit of a miracle that I managed to get to that stage. And my family were happy, but they were sad about which state I was in, because I just didn't realise yet that my cat from my house, my kitten, had died. I didn't remember anything about the relationship I had. I didn't remember how it broke up. She didn't know the girl because she was from down south. My family didn't know her. And yeah, it's just like one of those times when my family had to give up my house for a stay because I wasn't working. There wasn't a big thing that I would live through this, so they had to give all that up for me. My sister dealt with all my affairs because she was at the time she was at university to be a lawyer. And I used to help her with all these kind of things and try and help her be assist as I could. I've always cared about her. She's my pride and joy. And so's my brother. And he was, you know, upset. I was upset at the time. Anyway, time went by. And weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and a month later, I started to think I was okay, but I wasn't okay. I was watching TV. I was speaking again. And things like that happened. But it wasn't a great time at all because I wasn't me at the time. My body was working. Stephen was gone, and that's the honest truth, because my family have told me that, and there's a reason now I have no memory of this, and because I wasn't, my cognitive abilities were gone.
But you felt okay.
I felt okay, but I didn't like to see everybody upset, because I never understood what they're upset about.
Yeah. Did you feel like you could leave the hospital?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't that progressive at that stage to think. I didn't know what hospital I was in or where I was.
Okay.
What had happened to me. It felt like a dream, like a bad dream, a nightmare. So it was a lot of things not clear to me. As time went by, I started to pick things up a little bit and spend time with my family. I felt as if I'd failed them, to be honest with you, because I was now mentally disabled, and things weren't the same way they used to be. I'd lost Stephen, myself, and I couldn't even, when I found out about my dad, my nana, my cat, what had happened, how bad people were, how long I'd been here, what injury I had, what we removed, what was put back, and how the brain damage all affects me in learning anything new or speaking. So time went by, I started to get up and go for a tea. I started to go for a tea, I watched something on the TV. My papa was there every day. He came up from his house to the hospital every day. And my family were broken at the time because they thought they'd lose somebody else. And it's the first thing that came back to me, something I could do, was to not have them feel like that, because I wasn't used to that. I'd done this to myself. Doesn't matter if it was entirely my fault. I shouldn't have been doing things like being my friends earlier in the day or taking it to that extreme where I wanted to go that extra mile for someone, my mum, and go and see her. So things passed. I was there for 6 months, I think, 5-6 months, and started to walk about, and I became very talkative. Not that anything was making sense. The other thing I can't remember is when I first woke up, and started to walk, I was going around the hospital and the people were in the room with me, because everybody was in the same room to be looked at and made sure they were okay, like they wouldn't be left, and things like that. So I started to get up and ground beds, and I started trying to be a doctor. My mum told me I was trying to be a doctor, and the nurses all knew about it and told my mum. I was going around people that were Spanish and French, and I was trying to put the best accent on I could. I probably wasn't saying things like, je suis désolé, which is French for I'm sorry, what's happened to you. I wasn't saying lo siento in Spanish. I was just speaking with accent. And I was looking at their sheet, and I was telling them I'm better off being a doctor, I can look after them. So that was my pride of caring for someone, that I couldn't care for my family, I was trying to care for other people, and they were going with it. And the nurses used to have a good laugh. I was going on for everybody, but I wasn't Stephen. I was just somebody else. So time went by, I became better that way. And my papa started coming up, and I started taking, going for walks inside, eventually managing to get out the door. It was locked because people were leaving, and I would time the door shut and things like that. So brain ability started to come back a little bit. And I met two people from a place that has helped me massively in my life, from a place called Graham Anderson House. Graham Anderson House, where I am at this present moment, to come back, and I can see my room that I was in over your shoulder. I can see a room and all my memories from speaking to you and the things I did with people in here started coming back to me, and then I walked through the front door because I'd shut it off. So coming in, I wasn't used to the environment at all. I thought I was going to be here for a couple of weeks. I wasn't. There was people who'd been here for years before me, and there's people who'd been here for years after me. Everybody's different. Your brain, everybody's brain's different. You know, having the injury I had, there was no chance that I should have ever left here. But I wanted to, as I says, do positive things by appreciating the people who are helping me. A speech and language therapist, or it was Jan. Well, your name is Jan. The psychologist, Niels, and my occupational therapist, which was Ellie, which I couldn't say the name properly for so long because I didn't recognise how to spell things. It's not how Ellie's spelled, Ellie. So things like that. I wrote your names on the board because I wanted to say, right, these people are here to judge if I can ever get out or go home, but I'm just going to go with the flow. And I says, I'm going to try and do it properly. My moods at the time were so up and down, where it was frightening. I was so alone. I was in a part of Glasgow I'd never been before, an area I wouldn't particularly want to travel to be honest with you. And I wasn't used to it, but the people when they came in and seen me, I would always do my best and have a chair ready for them, sit out for them, my room would be so clean and tidy. And I tried to go with it because they wanted to help me, and I didn't like being helped. But at a time had passed, I knew I needed the help. So I started a change of attitude from not doing something because you need to doing something because you want to.
Wow, Stephen, that's amazing.
Yeah. So you can imagine how my cognitive abilities were at this time. They weren't great. I didn't have any memory of things. I didn't understand what had happened. Nothing seemed real to me. I didn't think about my job. I couldn't remember it. I couldn't think about my ex. I couldn't remember it. I didn't think about people that died because I couldn't remember. Over the course of the following weeks that passed, I started to remember these things myself, and I felt terrible.
So do you remember what things you were doing in rehab?
Yeah, you mean like psychology and things like...
Yeah, what things helped you in rehab, do you think?
The people who came into my room, is where I was seen, were very nice. Not that I was always the nicest at the times. I was trying to be professional and do what I could do. But I started to get into it a little bit, to be honest with you, because it let me know where I was at out of 10. At that stage, I was probably around about 3. I thought it was at 8. I wasn't. I was wrong. And I can remember the assessments and tests I used to do with yourselves, which I remembered and mentioned to you just as I came in the door there. I remember this, did we do this story, Jan? And I spoke to Niels. He was over the moon to see me. And obviously, Ailey's off on holiday there now. That's fine, I didn't expect to see anybody. I came here because I wanted to do something that's meaningful. So anyway, I came in here, I did these assessments, and the chef we had must have recognised that I was doing my best at the time, but I didn't have anything in my life. I had nothing. I'd lost everything in my head. I lost myself. And he said to me, off the record one time, which I probably shouldn't mention, but I will, he said to me, can see that you don't entirely want to be here, but you've not, he was honest with me, he says, you've not got the ability to leave yet. You won't leave unless you get your head down and stay focused. And I thought to myself, he's right, because that's things that Jan was saying to me, Niels was saying to me, I'm an occupational therapist, so something must change down the line. So I started believing in myself to get to a stage.
Good on you, Stephen.
Believing, when I had nothing, I couldn't do anything, I started believing. And over the coming months, weeks that passed, I started to look forward to my sessions. I made sure I'd done them. I tried to be helpful. I wasn't in any way able to help the professionals that were taking care of me, but I tried to, and they would show some faith in me, believing, or give me that hope that I could go with them to a group meeting with Jan. And I found it astounding that I was given that chance. So I said, well, she's taking me to these classes, and sometimes I'd have to write on the board or read a sheet she was giving me to people in the class. I'd be reading it. I never thought that I couldn't do these things at the time. All I thought about at the time was, Jan's asked me to do it, so I can do it. And I didn't know how you knew that. I still don't. So yeah, I did that. The classes were great. Everything was going well. And there was a bit of light at the end of the tunnel at one point, because it was told that what I've done so far and got my head down into, whether I got them right or wrong, everything would, it was leading me to a time where I could be released. And I say released, as you go, the word right there, as if, because the two doors were locked, they were close to my room, everything was fully locked in. You feel as if you're going nowhere, you have nothing. I got my phone back for the first time in 6 months. I hadn't spoke to anybody. My sister had been my power of attorney at the time, as I said, so she could take care of all my things, my emails, my work, hospital, get rid of the house, pay this off. And, you know, they didn't have access to my phone for 6 months either, because they couldn't guess my code, which was like 6 digits. So you can imagine, during that time, there's a lot of people that didn't know what was going on. But I had friends that came here to see me as well, like Rachel, the nicest person in the world you can meet. From Edinburgh, she came in and she brought me things to draw with. It was things to draw and use pastels. My friend Robbie came, he gave me magazines to read and films and things I used to like. And my friend Simon came, he done very much the same thing. I had my older friends when I was younger who I could recognise now. At this point, I could recognise people, and then memories would come back to me when I seen them. So during that time, it was very much good. You know, if I was going to making a chicken curry, it eventually led to a point where I could get out for the weekend, and I would go to my papa's house and stay there.
I remember that.
And I was so happy. It started as a day, it turned into 2 days, the weekend, and I was just over the moon. And then I had to come back, so I knew it wasn't done yet. I wasn't ready. I had to do more and more and more, push myself. This was the time now in my life to focus on myself and worry about myself. So this was my time. There was no way I should have survived to get to this stage and where I am. So I said to myself, well, my brain is actually working now. And some things are up and down in here, and my brain is actually working. Not to its full capacity, but it shouldn't be for the damage done to it and people that have been in that situation. You know, regarding a thing like the first 2 years when you pick up the most stuff, people are in here for years and years because they're here for the best reasons. It's meaningful for them to be here. The professionals in here at Grey Manderson House, like yourself, do an amazing job. I'll never ever forget it. They dealt with me, and I can't go over my head.
So where are you at now, Stephen? What's happening in your life now?
Now? Yeah, so it's an amazing time. So I was just saying, I'll just finish off by saying I got out. Yeah. So
you got released.
I got out. But things were not too good when I got out either. So now, she's, right. Yeah, I've been out for a few months, and people at my, I'd spoke to work, to get back to work.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever thought my family would get back to work. But I knew I could. And that was from the people that had helped me, showed that belief in someone. So I started to believe and forget about, I didn't know this. I agreed, my brain was still working, it's the same way it was, always was. I went back to work, and from my work at Premium Credit, I had a manager in Grants, HR in Caroline, to help me with onboarding. I had to get tests done by an external third party doctor to see why I had come back, what I could do. So I was half day, full day, and then it moved like that. It was very much not one step forward and one step back, two steps forward and a step back. So there was some progress. I believed and I wouldn't give up. I said, I'll just do the same with this job in my life as after that we have, because I've only been there 3 months. It didn't feel like 3 months. It felt like a year.
Did it?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. So I believed I could do it if I've done it. And what could happen in the future? Keep your eyes open. Be open. Things could get better. They don't normally. It's a low percentage of people do. And so I did that, I went back to work, and I remember what I did when I went back to work. I would look at the clock, and I was always counting the clock down in the half days. I was like, right, I've wanted to do this, so I need to do it. I was pushing myself. I took my focus away from everybody else and says, this is my time. I've got a short period of time I can improve myself. So I was fully, fully focused. But it was Carolyn, Grant, Paul, up to the top level, Josie, everybody showed care. And I appreciate that, because when someone gives you a chance, you need to go with the flow, you need to try. I'm quite an ambitious person, try. If I get myself better, then I can start to feel better with my family and find a better balance to my life. So I was working away. Not long after I left rehab, or just as I left, I was playing football with a head protection on.
Mm-hmm.
I was a goalkeeper. I picked the worst position, so I was always good. I had fast reactions of both left and right, as I've mentioned before, but I wasn't the same. I was a bit slower to get these reactions moving. A ball hitting you at that pace, I remember a few I couldn't feel it because I didn't have that side of me that could feel things like that, pain like that. So anyway, I played that, I was going back at work, everything was going well enough in my life. Living with my papa, he was caring for me a bit mad. So I went down the line, and what had happened was, I wanted things to get even better. So I started to put some ideas out there and change the way I did things. I was listening to a lot of music, even if I was working, a lot of music. I bought a nice home office myself with my papa, he helped me of course. And it was nice to look at. I had my music, and with music it stimulates, so it's a brain workout, it stimulates all areas of the brain at the same time. So that's the part, you use all of your brain to listen to music. Things like emotions, words, tunes, the way it is. I started playing my guitar again, which was big of me to do that. And from there there was a development there where I knew how bad I must have been, how hurtful and broken I must have been. What had happened to me must have affected the family. I was considered wanted to do more, so I started saying things at work, which I'll just ideas and things. So over the course of time, we get a new manager, because my previous manager had other departments as well. He was lovely. Everybody was lovely to work, and my team as well, and Jean and Kathy, quality analyst in finance. Everybody was smart, and I knew I could get there because of the progress I'd made in such a short period of time shocked me. So, and eventually what happened at work was I was asked to do a takeover of Ireland into a process. So I had to learn a process from start to finish. I'm used to journeys. I'm still in one. I was still in one then. So I had to learn this, the whole process for the UK, and be the man in the middle of the sea. And do both sides. So that helped me, that kind of thing. Give me confidence.
The trust and the belief.
It was belief that I like, is trust and belief in people, which is the way.
And them and you.
Yes. Yes, entirely. So I knew it was in me somewhere, and I just had to see and put everything together. So one night I made notes up, and I wrote down things that happened before that I can do now, because I have no choice. I'm alone and nothing is going to come back to me. I need to show and do things, not show people and prove it, but believe more in myself. So the last few months have been great, because that's the way it's went. It's uphill.
Great, I'm so glad to hear it.
I've also been to a stag do. My brother is married now. I went there to Tenerife. The only person there on the stag, which was a few days, 3 or 4 days, that wasn't drinking the whole time. So it was pretty good.
Looking after your brain.
Yes, I was taking care of myself. And also, I wanted to make sure I was there for other people. For example, one night I took a guy home because he was passed out.
Caring.
He slid and I caught him from falling on the ground, and I really damaged my back.
Oh no, Stephen.
Yeah, so we talked to the professionals in here. So professionals that were assigned to me when I got out were a psychologist for things I missed in here. Tests, occupational therapist.
And that was community?
Yes, community brain treatment centre, yeah.
Yeah.
A physiotherapist. So I had a lot of things going on, and a psychiatrist. It was all given by the doctor, so mm-hmm. all people from different departments. Mm-hmm. And I liked it, because I'd already done it. I compared it to the time with yourself, and I said, it's something I need to do. I need to do it. I think I'm okay now, things are going well, but I'm going to make sure this never happens again.
Stack everything in your favour.
Yeah.
Get as much out of the process as
you Yeah, do. So this year, end of the year, I'm looking at buying a new house.
Oh, I was going to ask you what your plans are for the future.
Yeah, I always thought I was going to step ahead of the game, but I wasn't. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to buy a new house at the end of the year. I'm a lot closer to the family. It's close knit again after the deaths that have happened, which set me on a trail to you know where. And next month, I'm in London for a couple of nights for my work, for meetings and stuff. So I'm getting out there and I'm doing a lot of different things now. Talked about a house. Next month I also have a triathlon, believe it or not.
Seriously?
Yeah. So this past year all I've done is think about my head and work in my head.
Yeah.
Regarding, I also do a lot of brain training on my own.
Anything you would recommend to anyone listening?
I think it's something I've paid for. Right. So a lot of them are free. I wanted to pay for one that was done by scientists, lecturers, professionals and things.
Is that an app?
Yes, it's an app, it's called Peak. So that tests your cognitive abilities in all areas, and I got addicted to it. And the reason for that was...
Is it like games?
Yeah, it's like games, it's like... I'll try and remember a few of them. It's like memory, mm-hmm. problem solving, languages, mental agility. And I noticed that some of them are pretty high. In fact, it's the same shape all the way around, which I didn't expect. So I did that, I just do it every night and every day, and it proves something to yourself, it keeps you going. Mm-hmm. You're doing something.
You're doing your own rehab.
Yes. I got into the 90th percentile, which is you're doing better than 90% of people that are doing this app. And I thought, well, the only people with half a brain would buy this app for money and go and do it. But I'm wanting to improve myself. What I also did for the rest of the year, I signed myself up to an accredited course which focuses on mental health awareness.
Okay.
Because that tells you how good I'm feeling now. That I don't want to, if anything happens to anybody in my family or my friends, or if I'm needed at work, if I'm needed anywhere, I want to be able to be better prepared to be able to deal with these things now. So if I get accredited, forget about a bit of paper. It's about experience and knowing these things and wanting to give something back, because everybody's given a lot to me.
Yeah.
I want to be able to help people.
So, we're going to come to a close, but you know what, Stephen? I'm going to throw a question at you, maybe two.
Go for it.
Right. What would you, if there was anybody with a brain injury listening,
yeah,
what advice would you give them?
I would speak to them, and I would just say, I know how this feels. I know how low you are. You feel powerless. You've lost everything. But I know now it can be done. Start believing in yourself. Keep faith in yourself. No, it's not going to happen overnight. But you get to the stage where it's not longer a step forward and a step back. You're making steps, small steps, that's all you need, in the right direction, but you're going somewhere. Set an aim and don't time it. Don't think you're going to get everything right. But in time, you can only improve it yourself, so believe in yourself. And I would probably not touch on it, I'd probably touch on it, but I'd say something like neuroplasticity is the first 2 years of your recovery. So I mentioned it earlier, the fact that your neurons try and make connections to each other like they used to, but for the brain damaged parts, they can't. So they need to go through different areas of the brain that you've never used before and make that connection.
And that's why music's so good.
And music accesses all these areas. So in learning, see learning and doing courses, I mean progressive things, meaningful things, you can only make new connections. And in a way, things can actually get better for you over time, which I've shown.
And I've got one more.
That's why I'm here.
What, same sort of question, what advice might you give to people like me, so professionals that work with people with brain injuries?
I couldn't give you, what can I...
What would you say to me about helping people with brain injuries? What could I do better or more of? Or?
Well, only from my own experience, came in here, I've been entirely comfortable being rehab. First time I thought that would be like that. I'm in here right now. And I would say the job you do is absolutely perfect. I think you've got real drive and ambition to help people. I think everything you do is good and very good. And I think the way you put it across to someone who's not ready or at that stage, if you believe in them, make them feel included in what you're doing, like you did with me.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me to do a gazette in here, a newspaper at one point.
Oh, yeah. The wee issue.
And I'd have to speak to people and write things down like a small magazine. And I didn't have time to do it because I was out. I was getting out. I think everything you do in the professions in here as well, everybody you meet is going to be different or at a different stage. But the best thing you can do is the way you do it, with, you know, tone of voice, emotion, professional experience, and put everything into it where you're there to help a person and you know that, you feel good about your job. I already know that. So, to make people believe in themselves. And down the line, it's taking a chance in yourself, but down the line, you can win. And people can win.
Okay. Well, that's good advice for us, working with people, is just to... I often say to people, you know, I know trust can be an issue, so... Can you trust me a little bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When you're in a place like this, you don't really know that much of things at the time, depending on which stage you're at, how bad your injury was. So having trust in a person and making it, changing the game a little bit, make it exciting for yourself. Say, okay, next week I'm going to do better so I can see a bigger smile on my face.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and make her proud of me and know that she's been good to believe in me. I'm going to give something back and get better, and things progress, of course.
As you say, Stephen, sounds like you're very ambitious and you challenge yourself, and you know, and my hat's off to you for your progress and your recovery. You're incredible. So
thank you very much. It's so good to hear.
I thank you so much for taking the time to come and see me again and sharing your story on the Brainy Speech
Therapy podcast.
It's the
first I've talked about it all.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
and I've done it on a podcast.
Yes. Well, I'm sure all our listeners will be super impressed.
Yeah.
And you never know. You might want to come back and talk to us some more another time.
Of course, I'm very much open to that.
Yeah.
In life, anything is possible. Never give up.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury,
please seek dedicated professional advice.